You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
For the month of March, I'm taking a break from recording new episodes so that I can highlight some of the other fantastic podcasts that I've had the privilege of being a guest co-host on. This week, I'll be replaying part of an episode of Retro Life for You with host Chris Adams. Chris reached out to me last year to guest host on an episode about Chuck Norris, and we hit it off immediately. Chris loves the 80s and created Retro Life for You to talk about all things retro from the 2000s, the 90s, the 80s, and even the 70s if he's feeling good. From Dukes of Hazzard to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, he loves to reminisce about the greatest shows and movies from our childhood. So light up the cigars and crank up Long Tall Sally on the boombox as Chris Adams and I get to the chopper to discuss Predator from 1987 on this special Retro Life for You replay episode of the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast.
Whatever it is out there, it killed Hopper, and now it wants us.
Nothing like it has ever been on Earth before.
She says the jungle, it just came alive and took him.
It kills for pleasure.
He was skinned alive!
It hunts for sport.
He's killing us one at a time.
But this time,
if it bleeds, we can kill it.
It's picked the wrong man to hunt. Arnold Schwarzenegger, Predator, rated R. The hunt begins Friday.
Hello, movie viewers and movie lovers. My name is Tim Williams, the creator and host of the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. On each episode, I'm joined by an 80s flick-loving guest co-host to talk about one of the great and sometimes not so great movies from the 1980s. From blockbusters to cult classics to lesser-known treasures we discovered on cable TV or the now-defunct video rental stores from our childhood. No matter which 80s flick we choose for each episode, we have a lot of fun sharing first-time watch memories, discussing our favorite iconic scenes, and even learning some behind-the-scenes stories about the cast and crew along the way. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe and follow 80s Flick Flashback on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcast platform is. And while you're there, leave us a stellar written review and a 5-star rating. You can also support the show by following us on our social media pages. Just search for 80s Flick Flashback on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And don't forget to check out our website, 80sflickflashback.com, as well. If you want to take your support to the next level, you can become a financial partner for less than $10 a month. The link to financially support the podcast is located in our episode show notes. And while you're there, be sure to check out more fun facts and behind-the-scenes trivia we just weren't able to fit into today's episode. Thanks for listening. Now, on with the show.
Predator from 1987. This is one of my favorite, if not the absolute favorite, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie that he's done. And I like quite a bunch of True Lies. I love Total Recall was good. The Eraser was good. Commando was probably... Oh, man, I forgot Commando. Wow. Commando and Predator, man, they're like... Oh, I don't know. It's like...
See, I like Commando, but I'm a softie for The Running Man. I love The Running Man. But, you know, I was going to say, when it comes to 80s, I think it's Running Man, Predator are, you know, pretty close in there. Terminator is good, but I don't have the love for Terminator that other people do. I think it's good, but I don't think, Schwarzenegger was still trying to figure out who he was. He didn't have much screen time. He's barely in the movie, really. But you said True Lies. I think True Lies may be my all-time favorite Schwarzenegger movie.
I love Terminator as well, like you said.
Yeah.
Terminator, Terminator 2, Terminator 3. I mean, it's just that, like you mentioned, he was still trying, I think, to figure himself out. in the original Terminator, as good as it was.
Yeah.
I'm also more of a fan of the, you know, the good guy of the movie and everything, usually. Mm-hmm. And Schwarzenegger was not the good guy of Terminator, but they figured a way to turn that around, though. They did. They figured out who likes what, and they flipped him around, and now he's the good one in that, right? So,
don't forget about Conan the Barbarian.
You know, I haven't forgot about Conan, but I am not a huge Conan mark, okay? People are going to look at me and say, what? of course, my original co-host, Travis, loves Conan.
Yeah.
He is so big on Conan. He's got like a Conan unopened box, an open DVD, the Blu-rays, got all these different things. I believe he's got a Conan sword.
Oh, wow.
If I'm not mistaken, he can quote you.
No, I believe
every major quote from Conan the Barbarian, and probably Conan the Destroyer, too, truth be known. So, I mean, everybody's got their thing, right? I mean, we know with Arnold Schwarzenegger, a lot of his stuff is quoted quite often.
Oh, and yeah.
From this movie alone, we get our favorite, you know, like, stick around, when he sticks the guy to the tree with the big knife or something. He's well known for those things. But this movie was, believe it or not, now, do you think this movie that year, I don't know if you looked it up or anything or not today, because usually you look some things up before we do these things, and sometimes you don't get around to them. But did you know this movie was not the number one movie that year?
It was not, yeah.
And you would think such a big grossing movie as this for Schwarzenegger would be the movie of the year, right? But no, not so much. Do you remember what the movie of the year was that year?
I didn't look it up, but I mean, I just know from when we did the episode that it was not the number one movie of the year.
If I'm not mistaken, Beverly Hills Cop 2.
That sounds right.
The actual movie. Now, this movie itself does not do shabby.
No, I don't think it was as big of a hit. I mean, it's more definitely a favorite, but I don't think it was quite the box office hit.
I don't think it really took off to a VHS.
Yeah. I don't remember if this was like, it was June, so it was a summer release. So I'm sure it did well, but, you know, back then, summer stuff just, even now, when, you know, they got new movies coming out every week, so sometimes it has a big opening weekend, and then it kind of diminishes as the weeks go on with other new releases coming out, so.
Right. But, well, I mean, the
Beverly Hills Cop 2 was huge, so I can see why that
one was. That was the first movie was huge, and this one was way expected and waited for by the fans of it. So they couldn't wait for that to hit. This was kind of new. What wasn't really new for Schwarzenegger because he'd done sci-fi with Terminator.
Right.
But this is kind of a sci-fi kind of feel to it with you know, the Predator in it hunting them down. And the estimated budget, $15 million. Opening weekend alone, it almost made the budget. It's $12 million. Roughly. The gross worldwide, it grossed $98,268,458. So it didn't do bad.
It's not bad at all.
But it still was not, after making all that much money, the movie of the year, Beverly Hills Cop 2, and up being with it. Hour 47 minutes long, which is, to me, kind of like a nice spot. Hour and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Hour and 45 minutes for a movie like this is the perfect length, I think. You get a little bit of a story up front, enough to understand it and like it, and then you get all the action and the fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And the cast. Can you tell me a better cast of people to have as a group? They were not mercenaries. They were
just commandos.
They were commandos that they're there for rescue purposes mostly. They don't do, you know, the infiltrating and kill and that type of deal like some of the others do and everything. But Arnold Schwarzenegger, now Carl Weathers was not a part of his group. He was the one that he knew as a, you know, from before, another
colleague,
former colleague, like who's going to work with the CIA. Bill Duke, which I think Schwarzenegger likes to work with. He worked with him in Commando as well. Jesse Ventura, he worked with Schwarzenegger in Running Man.
Yep.
Sonny Landham.
Oh, yeah.
Who played Billy?
Wasn't he in Commando as well?
I don't believe he was. I was trying to think. I know he was in 48 Hours.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking of Sully. Sully was also the guy who played Sully. Was also in...
And in 48 Hours.
48 Hours. He worked with... That's where I got the...
That's right. Okay.
I got him mixed up there.
We got Richard Chavez, played Pancho. I don't know if he played with Arnold in another movie or not, But his character is really smooth, though, for a commando type guy. He's the one that we're talking about when Ventura gets hit. He's like, man, you're bleeding. He goes, I ain't got time to bleed. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, well. And he launches three grenades up on the guy at the top because, you know, Ventura's like, that guy's dug in like an Alabama tick.
Right, right.
So he shoots up three grenades up there. He goes, well, you got time to move? Mm-hmm. Boom, mm-hmm. boom, boom, boom. R.G. Armstrong was General Phillips.
Yep.
A lot of people may not know the name R.G. Armstrong, but when you see the man, you can tell right away you've seen him in a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he sticks out to me, unless I'm thinking of somebody different, as the guy who was the captain to Chuck Norris in Lone Wolf McQuaid of the Texas Rangers. I don't know if that's him or not.
I'm trying to look through his filmography. Let me go back. I didn't go back far enough. Hold on.
While you're looking at that, we also had Shane Black playing Hawkins.
Yep, yep.
And I don't recall Shane Black from most any of the movies, really.
No, he really didn't do that many. He was like, he started as an actor, but he was really a screenwriter, so he didn't do a whole lot of acting work. That's one of his few, but he also doctored the script while he was there working on the movie. But yes, you were right about R.G. Armstrong. He was in Lone Wolf McQuaid.
Okay. He looked like he was. That look is kind of unforgettable.
He's got that Western kind of look to him.
Oh, he did Westerns too now. If I'm not mistaken, he played a few episodes of Gunsmoke and some mm-hmm. actual movies themselves. Gosh, I didn't watch many of the old Westerns, though, when he was in them, so I can't really tell you a lot of what he was in. But still,
good cast, though. Face, yeah.
Now, the Predator himself was played by Kevin Peter Hall. Mm-hmm. He also did Harry and the Hendersons, I think, didn't he? Wasn't he the Bigfoot?
I believe he was. That is correct. Yep.
I can't swear to this, but I think he was. Anna, do you know a little bit of trivia before we go past this point, since we're talking about the Predator himself? Do you know who the original person who played the Predator was?
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I mean, what's up with that? Can you imagine they got a fight going on, and all of a sudden the Predator jumps up and does a split-leg roundhouse kick?
Yeah, the suit was also a little different. So, like, they weren't sure what the Predator was going to be when they first started filming. So they definitely tried a few things. You can find some of those pictures online of Van Damme in the original, quote-unquote, original Predator suit, and they made the right choice. That's all I'm going to say. Changing it up was much better. And so originally the Predator was supposed to be much more like a hand-to-hand combat, more karate martial arts, but Van Damme wasn't able to do the moves in the suit as easy.
Right.
So yeah, he quit.
I'm glad they did not make like that.
Yeah.
That just wouldn't have, I mean, looking back on what we've seen and what we took in with it, that would not have fit at all.
No, I think that would have put it in more, it would have felt more like a B movie at that point. I mean, it's all far-fetched anyway, but you get into the movie would not be as grounded as it is now. Cause even though it's still sci-fi, but it feels like it could really happen. Like it feels much more grounded that the Predator that we have in this film makes more sense of him being a real predator hunter, not just a fighter or a warrior.
Right. And the thought behind it maybe doesn't look like the Predator does, but the thought behind, like you said, something coming from another planet and hunting people for sport on this one, based on what their criteria is, could, you know, who knows? We don't know what's out there. It's a huge mm-hmm. universe.
Oh yeah.
So, I mean, definitely some believable stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
But if they had gone with it and made it like that, I started to say, I believe you just did a podcast of something from outer space that does kung fu.
Quack
only it's quack fu.
It's quack fu, and that's Howard the Duck. Yes, we just did an episode on Howard the Duck.
Dude, I saw your thing for that, and I was like, man. Flooding to my mind all these things, all the different things. There's so many duck puns in it.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
I was like, was it quack foo or duck foo?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember. And I was it's like, so, I hit, you up, so yeah. I hit you up on your post. I'm like, which is it? Which is, you know, that's awesome stuff. I've not seen that movie since the 80s. I mean, I've got to go back and watch that one again eventually. And you guys get a chance to check out his podcast on Howard the Duck.
Please
as
do.
Well as well as the rest of them. which we have told everybody before, but in case they don't remember, 80s Flicks Flashback.
That's right? Me. Yep. 80s
Flicks, you will find him everywhere you find the podcast at. The man is everywhere. I mean, he makes my show look tiny. I mean, he's like, he gets like 10,000 per episode or.
No, not yet.
9,000. 9,000.
No, not yet. I appreciate.
He's got more than me.
Yeah, I appreciate the sentiment. Yeah, we'll get there eventually. But yeah, we're getting right there.
We're all gonna get there.
Oh yeah, yeah.
We're gonna be looking down later, going, "We got 10,000. What do you have?" Don't worry, kid. Been there, done that. Right. You'll get there. That's what we're gonna do. We get. I done lost track of where I was at, man. This is the
you were talking about Van Damme being the original Predator.
Van Damme being the original Predator. Yes, I'm really glad since the series stuff that they didn't go that direction. It just would not have been the same at all. I mean, I like the setup of the group, all right? Jesse Ventura and Bill Duke, Mac and Blaine. They went into this one fight together as Mac is telling the story after Blaine's been killed. And he tells about how the two of them went to this place. Terrible fight. Everybody died. It seemed like except them two walked out. Mm-hmm. Like they were the two that made it and walked out and everything. And the shot that Blaine took from the Predator was from the laser cannon on his shoulder.
Yeah.
That shot straight. One hit his arm, I guess, or his gun, one or the other. Mm-hmm. The other one hits him straight through the chest coming from the back.
Oh, yeah.
Explodes the chest outward, and everything is cauterized shut. Now, it's like he's dead, obviously, but everything is, there's no blood leaking anywhere. Just everything is just cauterized shut from them. They're like, what in the world could have made the damage like this? What was it? Did you see it? The two of them together were really good. Sonny Landham, you got your guy. He's your tracker. He's the one that knows the terrain. He's of Indian descent. He's got all the skills you would look for in somebody who could do the things he's expected to do and help them out. I think Richard Chavez, though, was more of a weapons kind of guy for the group. And that and the tracker both, because he sent him off track in one way and Billy another. So that is kind of interesting. The character of Hawkins, I don't think he really fit in so well with that group. I think he was just a humor aspect because he's the first one to get killed and go.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
The humor, because he's telling Sonny jokes we're not going to repeat on the show.
No. Best jokes either.
No, not the best of jokes, but just trying to get him to laugh. And he finally laughs at one of them, but we'll leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not surprised that he didn't last long. Just from beginning of the movie, watching it, even when I first saw it, I think I remember to myself when I first watched it thinking, he's probably going to be the first one to die because he just doesn't seem important.
Yeah, he's the red shirt of the group for sure.
Yeah, I thought originally what would happen was the two biggest names in that group of people there was Carl Weathers and Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the two of them would be living to fight against the Predator in the end. And, of course, we see what happened. Dylan, Carl Weathers, goes after Mac, who chases after the Predator, who he sees him and chases after him and everything. And this is the first time that Dylan actually sees the Predator.
Right, right.
And he comes to the realization this is completely what he said it was. It's true. Mm-hmm. I've got to make amends here. I've got to go help him and make sure he comes back because he's just lost somebody. We don't want to lose him too. So he just tells him, make sure you hold that chopper. We're going to be there. And of course, they hear in the distance what happens, and they don't come back from it either.
Right, right.
But he's this thing is taking them out one at a time. An elite military commando group. Crazy thing altogether in my mind, thinking about how you'd have something that could pick them apart, and then they can't figure out what's going on, not knowing that it's using the trees.
Yeah,
it's going through the trees. It's not touching the ground at all. That's why they're not seeing anything, or why they're missing. Is there any part of this movie leading up? From beginning to where they are, they have they decide they're going to take a stand, right? Because if they don't take a stand, they may not make it to the chopper at all.
Right, right.
Is there a part of yours so far that kind of stands out as a favorite or that you've liked so far in the movie?
I think especially as a kid, like watching this for the first time, and I don't think I saw this one in the theater. I think I saw this one on VHS when it came out. But I remember the part that we all, like me and my friends, would want to sit down and watch is the attack on the compound when they finally find the guy, you know, the I think they're supposed to be like Central American or whatever, and like Sonny's like, if these guys are Central American, I'm Asian or something. I don't remember the specific line he makes, but basically like that whole action sequence is great, because it's funny because the last two episodes that I've done on my podcast, Howard the Duck and Santa Claus the Movie, we've talked about are kind of like two different genre, or like the beginning of the movie is completely different from the second half of the movie, but that doesn't work. Like Santa Claus the Movie, the first part of that is like every kid's, you know, fantasy of Santa Claus, and it brings all the nostalgia, and the second half gets really weird and doesn't really fit with the first half. Kind of the same thing with Howard the Duck. The first half of the movie is zany and goofy and kind of funny, and then they get to this sci-fi part where it's like the tones don't really match. But with this movie, it works, because the first hour, and you know, except for, you know, the opening shot of the spacecraft coming, you know, coming out of the atmosphere, which I always forget is at the beginning of this movie. I never remember that that's the beginning. But the first half of this movie is just like your typical action movie that we were so used to seeing back then of, you know, there's this commando group and they're going in to get rescue these hostages, and there's going to be a shootout. So that shootout scene was what we wanted from a great action movie and what we expected. So all the carnage and the, of course you get the one liners, like I said, stick around and knock, knock, and he knocks the door, you know, kicks over the door, and then, you know, realizes that it's all the setup. They weren't there to get hostages, that Dylan only brought them there to get the intel that they had and this and that. Then it becomes this sci-fi, you know, almost like a horror movie, but it works. It's still like it doesn't, those two genres, at least in this movie, seem to work really well. So up to that point, yeah, the whole shootout at the compound is still one of my favorite action sequences of any action movie of the 80s.
And I think it works because they're still in that same general vicinity of the jungle. They haven't left the jungle.
Right. You know,
they started out getting dropped off in the jungle to go into where the compound you talked about, thinking that they're supposed to be holding people hostage there.
Right.
And while they're looking, you do see somebody getting executed. They were questioning them. They wouldn't talk. Mm-hmm. They shoot them. That's it. So you're thinking, he just shot one of the hostages. We got to hurry up and move in, you know?
Right.
But you know, they get in there and they start taking care of business. They're blowing things up right and left. Like you said, we get the one-liners we look for. We get the fun stuff I mentioned earlier with Blaine and the other guy, mm-hmm. where it's like, you got time to move.
Chavez, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, when you get into the part of the hut where Dylan's going through the paperwork and he's exposing himself right there. He's giving it away. Oh, yes, this is better than anything we could have thought it could have been. Oh, it's great. It's all here. This is awesome. And
Right.
He's looking for something. I can't find it. And Schwarzenegger's like, I believe this is what you're looking for. And he kind of hands it to him, but he grabs him with his left hand, just like he picks him up and puts him on the wall almost.
Yeah.
I don't think he actually had him in the air, though. I think he just kind of shoved him into the wall and then forcefully held him there. And he said, you set us up.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on here? This never was about hostages. This is about something else. What's going on? And then he tells him, you know, we stopped a major invasion. With all this information they got, they were going to, you know, within 2 days, make a major invasion. We stopped this from happening. This is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But he made the point earlier in the movie when he's talking to the general that his people are not, you know, mercenaries. They're not the type to go in and just kill and wipe things out. That's not their style. They go in to rescue and bring people home.
Yeah.
And so he's a little bit mad that he's been used and lied to. Yeah. And Dylan tells him to wake up. You're an asset. You're being used. And I lied to get you here. Exactly. You're expendable. Yeah. Where'd that come from? Where did that go later on?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. That seemed like another movie that came out much later.
I think that was reused by a colleague / buddy / 1980s frenemy of his.
Right, right.
For another movie later on that they both starred in. But you know, he tells him, you know, that if I told you I need you to come do this, you wouldn't have come. I had to tell you what I need to get you to tell you to get you to come here because you're the best they could do it. So he's like, is that what you told Jim Hopper?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the name Hopper, by the way, did you ever watch Stranger Things?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. So I only watched the first season
mm-hmm.
and I didn't get past it. I haven't started the second one, so I can't say it lost me or anything. I just haven't got to it anymore. But someone told me that the sheriff's name is Hopper, I think, and that's kind of a throwback to the Predator. Is that
It's kind of like a wink, wink, nod, nod, because of course Hopper in Predator is dead, so it's not really Hopper because he wouldn't have survived.
Right. But I mean, kind of like a shout out to the show in a way. We're wrecking because all throughout the first season, you get little tidbits of other shows you recognize, and like at one point, you think you're watching E.T. Some of the stuff they do, it's like kind of like a throwback to that general show or movie or something.
Lots of nods, but you got, and then Hawkins, who was one of the other characters, is the name, same name as the town. So there's this big, I don't say like conspiracy, but this fan theory that that the writers, the brothers that did the Stranger Things, must have been huge Predator fans because they named their main character Hopper and the town after Hawkins from the Predator movie.
That is awesome, though. I don't care what people say. They talk about actors and actresses, and they say that, man, these people got it made. Look how much money they make, I mean, quite used to be as much as it is today because of how much money the movies make these days. So naturally, the stars are going to get a bigger chunk of it.
Right.
But, I mean, to say that an actor or an actress doesn't really work for their money, I know they got stunt doubles. They got stunt doubles, right. Yes. Okay. But while filming this movie, they ran into a variety of hardships.
Yes, they did.
I understand reading, but I mean, you're talking anything from leeches to snakes, stifling humidity and heat, rough terrain, and it says all the night scenes were filmed during freezing cold temperatures, which was especially hard on Schwarzenegger during the latter half of the film when the mud he had to wear became cold and wet. And then the mud on top of it was actually pottery clay.
Right.
So, I mean, he would, so he was warned that he would take his body temperature down a few degrees, but so they said he shivered nonstop even when they tried to heat him up with lamps. All it did was make the clay dry out.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to say that these guys don't, do things right, I mean, it's really crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've read several stories. They talked about Harrison Ford filming Raiders of the Lost Ark had, food poisoning or dysentery. I mean, he had some kind of weird, throwing up, and, he should have been in the hospital, but he was still out there in the desert shooting scenes because, hey, got to stay on schedule, got to stay on budget. Right. And other movies where people have been, really sick, but they are, Jeremy Renner, of course, thoughts and prayers to Jeremy Renner as he's recovering from his accident at home. But when he was making the...
Was that at home it happened at?
It was near his house, or near where he lives. So.
Okay, I heard what happened with him and everything.
Yeah,
I've seen some clips from him from the hospital. He's doing okay.
Yeah, but he was doing one of the stunts for the movie Tag. I know we're getting away from 80s movies, but I think the story was he was on some chairs and they were supposed to go forward, but instead they went back because the weight shifted some weird way. And he fell and basically broke his arm, dislocated his shoulder. Oof. So he filmed the rest of the movie with his arm in a cast that they had to then reshoot or rechange some of the scenes and had to green screen. He had to wear a green cast so they could go back and digitally edit, make it look like he had a regular arm when it wasn't broken in the cast.
I mean, wouldn't it have been easier to just go back and refilm a scene where something happened where he broke his arm and the rest of the movie he had a broken arm?
But I think because of the character he played, it would have taken it kind of lost the whole part of the movie of them being doing what they do and not getting hurt. I mean, we've seen that where people have injured themselves and they had to write it into the script at the last minute. So
I got a little bit tickled. When I was reading about things they were trying to do to keep Schwarzenegger warm.
Mm-hmm.
They talked about the heat lamps and just dried the clay out. It said he tried drinking a yogurt tea,
mm-hmm.
a schnapps mixture to warm him up, but it just got him drunk.
Of course it did.
So can you see a drunk Arnold? Come here, Predator. Have a drink.
I'm here. Kill me. Kill me now. I'm here.
Drink with me.
And now these messages.
Hey, everybody. Do you ever just sit around with your friends and reminisce about days and how things used to be when you were a kid or a teenager or maybe even a young adult? The TV shows and the movies that you watched at the time and how things just aren't quite the same today? Well, let me tell you, I've got the place for you. My name is Chris Adams, and I'm the host of the podcast Retro Life For You. And here at Retro Life For You, we talk about and discuss movies and TV that is retro. And we are going back from the 80s and the 90s and into the 2000s. Hey, sometimes we might even touch back to the 70s if we're feeling good. If this is for you, make sure you look for us on everywhere that you can find your podcast at. Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, Google, Stitcher. We're hosted on Anchor FM. And make sure you follow us on all the major networks and leave us a rating and a review. It really does help. Look forward to hearing from you.
What seems to be the problem, pal?
There's just so much pain in the world, so many issues. I don't think I can bear it.
Well, friendo, it sounds like you could use a dose of pop culture roulette.
Pop culture roulette? What's that? Some sort of pop culture themed podcast or something?
That's right, sonny boy. When hope seems far, dive into some PCR.
But I already get my entertainment news from Variety.
Huh, that's pretty good. If you're a chucklehead, PCR gives you news you need, condensed, unfiltered, and raw, from three nerds who know a little something about something.
Wow, okay, sign me up.
That's the spirit. Pop Culture Roulette. New episodes every Monday, available on all major podcast directories.
Comic books have been around for almost a century, and in the last two decades, we've finally gotten to see many of these characters brought to life in movies and on TV. On the Moving Panels podcast, we discuss movies and TV shows based on, inspired by, and adapted from the world of comic books. Join me and my guests as we discuss both the good and the bad from Marvel, DC, and even some of the lesser-known comic book companies. Learn what is and isn't from the comics, as well as our nerdy review of the movie or show. New episodes drop every Monday, and you can find us wherever you listen to podcasts. So join us for Moving Panels, and I'll see you on the other side of the page.
Did you hear the story of Jesse Ventura? I'm sure you did. You did the show once already.
Yeah.
Jesse and Arnold.
And their nice little rivalry during filming.
Yes. Now, you remember it was about who had the biggest arm, right? Whose muscle?
Who worked out more? Yeah.
Yeah, they were having a little competition and stuff. And I think it was it Arnold or was it Ventura that wanted to get the arms measured to see who had the biggest arms?
It sounds like something Ventura would want to do. I don't remember.
I think, let's see, hold on. Let me scroll back around here. Here we go. Ventura was delighted to find out from wardrobe department that his arms were 1 inch bigger than Arnold Schwarzenegger's. He suggested to Schwarzenegger that they measure arms, with the winner getting a bottle of champagne. Ventura lost because Schwarzenegger had told the wardrobe department to tell Ventura that his arms were bigger.
Yep.
I don't know. You know, I would look at that as on-set practical joking.
Oh, yeah. They're having fun, but they're, you know, it's kind of a friendly rivalry.
Yes. And I mean, it's a much more friendly rivalry joke than what he did to Stallone when it come to Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
right.
I don't know if you've heard this story or not. Have you heard that story?
Yeah.
Okay. So we told it on a previous show before, myself and Travis did.
Right.
And just to make it really quick, Schwarzenegger and Stallone were very competitive in the 80s. They were always one-upping each other, how many kills, how much muscle they had, who shot the bigger gun. So the word got out that Schwarzenegger was about to do this movie called Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, and Stallone really wanted to get ahead of him. So he begged the people to let him have the role.
Right.
As it turned out, Schwarzenegger put that stuff out there. He never had any intention of taking the role.
No.
He just wanted to make sure that he took it instead and stuck him with it. And I was like, oh, my God, it is so hilarious.
Yeah. Because, and it's crazy that he would fall for it. That's what's crazy.
I know. And I like both of them. I like the movies they put out. But just see one day, it's like the hardest prank of all to put on someone. To say, look, you trick him into taking this awful movie. And I never liked it. I remember watching it. And I was like, this is not what I want to see Sylvester Stallone doing. This is not.
I don't think I ever watched it. I mean, I remember people talking about how bad it was. And I don't think I ever actually, I might have seen bits and pieces of it, but I never actually watched it. So
funny one-liners are one thing. It's like, I don't want to see Schwarzenegger in a comedy. I mean, Twins was the exception because,
yeah,
you know, you had Danny DeVito to pull the movie along with the comedy and everything. And I to this day, I've never seen Junior, and I won't watch it.
I think I did see it, but I wasn't a fan of it at all. You can say True Lies is kind of has some comedy in it, but it's not a straight up comedy.
Right. And I would say the comedy involved with it's more revolved around people like Tom Arnold.
Right. Right. He carries the heavy lifting in the comedy department.
I mean, you get that funny story in True Lies where he is, or the funny part where he's taking Bill Paxton down the road of the driving.
Yeah.
He's checking out the car. He thinks Bill Paxton is messing around with his wife. And well, he's trying to actually. He is trying to. Make her think she's important just so he can get her in bed and everything. But the things he does during this little dream sequence type, daydream sequence thing, mm-hmm. and then eventually makes him pee his pants or something.
Right, right.
Some of those things are kind of humorous and funny, but they're not comedy, ha-ha funny, if to me. Not, at least to me, it's not anyway. I thought it was funny when he's telling the guy who put the truth serum in him that he's laughing. He said, what are you laughing about? He says, oh, in about 15 seconds, I'm about to break free of this arm here. I'm going to snap this guy's neck, and I'm going to do this and that.
Right, right.
And he's like, well, that's interesting. How are you going to do that? Well, you're still, you know, handcuffed to the chair. And he's like, I got free. And then it starts. I mean, I'm just dying laughing at this.
With right,
Angel.
Right.
I forget what Angel was when I watched it. But stuff like that's great. And so speaking of the one-liners and the funny things, what do you think Arnold's personal favorite catchphrase of all of his films that he appears in?
Get to the chopper.
Get to the chopper. Yes. It is his favorite. People have used and abused that
right.
over the years so much.
But if you haven't seen the, I think it's a bit he did on Jimmy Fallon, mm-hmm. where him and Jimmy Fallon did like an infomercial for a chopping chopper thing. Like, you know, he had to use that line a couple of times. It was great.
Yes, it was awesome. And then, of course, he's got the different little things. He's like where he sticks the guy badly with a machete, and the guy is stuck to a wooden pole, and he just turns around and says, stick around. And it says this was apparently improvised by Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a part of the script. They didn't suggest to say stick around.
Right.
He just does it, and he just pops in his head to say, stick around. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know of all his movies what has the most one-liners. I want to say I think Commando probably has the most one-liners.
Yeah, I think so. I don't remember them as well. I don't remember the ones in Commando as well as I remember the ones in Predator.
Now, we mentioned earlier pranking each other on set.
Mm-hmm.
So Ventura pulled a prank on Schwarzenegger by pouring water all over himself while at the gym before Arnold arrived.
Right.
Thinking that Ventura was drenched in sweat, Arnold believed that Ventura was working out longer than he usually did. Well, he couldn't have this. He resolved to begin his workout sooner. He and Ventura both started arriving earlier to one-up each other, but they both started arriving at 4 a.m. in the morning. Not quite as funny as the measuring of the arms.
No.
But just now, I mean, to me, that could have stopped right there at the gym when he sees him drenched in sweat. Just put it in his mind, you know, that I'm working harder than you and leave it at that. I could see that.
Right.
But anyway, I'm seeing parts about Van Damme now talking about what they refer to as a ninja-like hunter. You know what, though? If they had gone with Van Damme originally and made him a ninja-like hunter, they couldn't have put him in a suit like that. I mean, we talk about being a different suit. I mean, I'm talking like he couldn't be a monster type alien, I don't think.
No.
And I'm not sure how you would really dress him out in that sense, but still.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you got to think about back then, too, with the kind of suits that they did where even you can even tell it in this one. It's a very, you know, thick rubber kind of a suit. So there's not a lot of mobility to be able to do much. I mean.
They have to change a lot around.
Yeah.
Have you seen the Predator's blood?
Yes. The glowing neon green.
Color of Mountain Dew.
Yeah.
Using a mixture of liquid from inside glow sticks
mm-hmm.
with KY jelly.
Yeah, and even watching it now, it's like I'm sure they used that, but they had to have added a glowing effect even more so, because it looks not. It looks like they doctored it up some. Maybe it's for the, since they've kind of redigitized it for like DVD and Blu-rays and stuff, they may have enhanced it from what it was when we were younger. But it definitely doesn't look. It looks like it has more of a glowing. They've added a glowing effect on it.
The now I didn't know this, but Schwarzenegger had lost. This is what I was mentioning earlier, because even something as simple as dieting or putting on weight or putting on muscle. He lost over 25 pounds before filming in order to better fit the role of a special warfare operative who would be lean as well as muscular.
Right.
I don't remember him being, you know, big, though, before that. I mean, he'd have to lose 25 pounds.
I think he's been bigger, like more, you know, like more muscular. I think, I mean, he's still in good shape in this one, but he is a little bit leaner. Of course, there are some scenes where you can definitely tell it's the stunt double who's definitely not as muscular as Schwarzenegger is. So that's always fun to watch pick out the stunt double. I feel like I'm that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where he's pointing at the TV like, there he is. There's a stunt double. I can see him right there. So, but yeah, there's a few, like, especially towards the end when he's running, there's one scene where he's, the predator is approaching him when he's in the water, and you can definitely tell that the guy he's approaching is not Schwarzenegger. He's the stunt double. But I think he was a little bit leaner. I mean, 25 pounds, it sounds like a lot to us, you know, guys like you and me that would, you know, love to lose 25 pounds.
Yes, very much so.
But on him, it's more muscle mass than, you know, anything else. And so he probably just wanted to tone down a little bit more, not be as buff. You know, if you've seen him in like Pumping Iron and Conan, I mean, he's really, you know, full on bodybuilder shape. That's different than, yeah, fighting shape.
Now, I did not notice about Sonya Landham. It says the studio's insurance company would not agree to insure their production unless a bodyguard was hired for Sonny Landham, who played Billy.
Right.
For the sole purpose of protecting people
from him.
Yes.
Yeah.
The bodyguard followed Sonny everywhere to ensure he didn't get into a fight, since he was well known to be violent and short tempered. I honestly never knew that before. Yeah. That's new to me. I mean, thinking of the other movies I've seen him in and seeing what type of characters that he plays, that sounds exactly like they make him out to be in real life. the character he played in 48 Hours.
Yeah, definitely.
Playing Tommy's brother in Best of the Best 3, where he's teaching them how to fight with the sticks and everything. That's just exactly just a violent drunk who was giving them a hard time and abusing them a little more than he should have. That sounds exactly how they're making him out to be in real life, and I never knew that. A lot of people by now know the, and I'm not going to say he's the voice of, because there's no voice for the Predator, really.
No, just the noises that he makes.
Yeah, the little noises and clicks he makes, Peter Cullen does. And Peter Cullen, which, you know, is more famous for doing Optimus Prime.
Yeah, yep.
And well, some other things. But when I think of Peter Cullen, the first thing I think of is Optimus Prime for the Transformers. Well, they get to the part toward, now Schwarzenegger has figured out it toward, let's just call him what he is, Dutch. Dutch figures out towards the end of the movie. And it's so much easier to say than Schwarzenegger. I mean, Dutch.
Right.
Dutch figures out while he's on the run. Now, everybody but him and the one guy that took the log, I think it was Chavez.
Yeah, I think so.
And the girl. They're on their way. Billy has stayed back to challenge the Predator on the log to try and keep him from getting across, because he's already foreseen, I guess, in his eyes, everybody's going to die.
Right,
and that's all there is to it. So he said, my time has come now, I guess. He says, where I'm going to put my stand at. So, you know, he's almost there. And he gets one last shot in on the guy he hurt, kills him. He's dead now and gone. The girl goes to pick up the rifle just to fire, because she thinks she can do it. And as Dutch knocks her away, turns the fire at him, he takes a little laser blast of his own. Now, here's the thing for me on this. Everybody has taken a laser blast so far. It's right. not way too pretty. Dylan lost his half of his right arm.
Right.
Blaine took a big hole in the gaping hole in the chest.
Right.
He just hit Chavez in the head. Mm-hmm. And you didn't they didn't show you what he did. He's face down on the ground. You probably right. didn't right. don't want to see this. But all we get for Dutch is a bruise on his shoulder.
Yeah, I think I want to say we talked about this on my episode, and I think it seems to be implied that the shot hits Dutch's gun and that he's bruised from the gun coming back and hitting him, not actually getting hit. But I would think if the laser is strong enough to blow open a guy's chest, it would probably completely disintegrate the gun that he had in his hand. But, you know, it's an 80s movie and the hero has to, you know, has to survive.
Right, but there's always those in all the 80s movies we watched and 90s movies, there's always something that stands out that they should have known people are going to pick up right. on, that they should right. have done a little bit differently or something.
Yeah.
Don't give them the laser blast. Have something thrown.
Right.
You know, that some other weaponry he has. Like, let's say he had a boomerang-type weapon that mm-hmm. hits his gun, which knocks him into his shoulder, knocks him down, and it comes back to him. I mean, something along those lines, a little right. more believable to it and all.
And then, too, if he was a real predator, like once Dutch was down, you would thought he would have shot again and took him out while he was, you know, kind of wide open.
Right.
But that also goes back to the girl, and I'm sorry, we're not using her name because I don't remember what it is.
I think it was Anna.
Anna, yeah. Which they don't know their girl's name through most of the movie anyway. But like how she even in this movie, because they're totally destroying this, going back to the compound, totally destroying this compound. She walks up behind Dutch. He basically knocks her out and they just take her as a prisoner. Was she fighting with them? Was she trying to be rescued? Like, we don't know anything about her, but she obviously has to be in the movie going forward. So the writers had to find a way for her to be part of the group, which I think is just interesting because even watching it today, when comes up behind and gets hit, I'm like, she has no backstory to know like why she was even approaching Dutch. Was she really trying to hurt him after he's blown away every other guy in that room? That would be a dumb right. thing for her to do. So I'm assuming that she was a hostage of theirs that they don't realize that. And they're just tagging her along. So that's another one of my big question marks, that one of those little logic parts that don't really work in this movie.
Exactly. And all I can figure that she was different for, and it was letting them know certain key things. Like she finally mm-hmm. breaks down and tells them in the jungle, when your big friend died, the other guy, he hit him. He shot him. His blood mm-hmm. was on the leaves. It was right. a green liquid on the leaves or something. So that leads to another one of the famous lines from the movie. If it bleeds, we can kill it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So she's there for that. She brings that aspect to it. She gives them a little confidence there that they know it's been injured. Mm-hmm. And it's bleeding. So if it's bleeding something and they can injure it some, they can kill this thing if they say that they do their stuff right.
Right.
So
right.
That part I kind of get. It was never thought about, and I guess because of what it was to them, it was this weird thing that they finally realized it's up in the trees. And they're getting some looks at it, and it's working like a chameleon to blend in with the forest and such. And they don't know its full capabilities, but how is it seeing exactly where they are and everything and what they're doing, and not realizing that it's got like a night vision kind of thing to them and a heat infrared mm-hmm. kind of view
mm-hmm.
when he's escaping from the predator and he falls down into the water and climbs back up out of the water, and he's got the mud all over him.
Mm-hmm.
I found that a little bit funny, but I guess it's because he hit his head sideways in the mud at first, and he starts pulling himself through. So it's just mud. So he turns his head mud side out. He's looking to see if he's trying to blend in with the thing behind him. Right.
Right.
Arms
right.
pulled up, mix blends in with the logs behind him, the brush and everything.
Right.
And it can't see him now. Now it's mm-hmm. blind. Now he's blind to him. You can't find him. He shoots over at a thing where this little muskrat or mouse or something was going
right,
through.
Right.
So it hits Dutch at that point. He's seeing his body temperature, his body heat. Mm-hmm. That's how he's tracking them. And I don't think he ever actually says it out loud or anything.
No, No.
But at that point forward, he's working with things that are heat related. Like he's going to build a big bonfire. He's going to do this with flames and fire and explosion and all this stuff. So he's figured out that it's the infrared and the body temperature that's doing it. And he has this big grandstand against him at the end. It's me versus him now. I'm going to take him out. I'm Dutch. I'm the man, you know. Everybody else is gone. The chopper is probably not there anymore. So,
right.
And he's far away from where the chopper is supposed to be. He can't make it back in time. But the one thing he can do is avenge his team and take this thing out. So, you know, going into it, he's got mud all over himself. He set up the booby traps everywhere. He's made the bow. He's got the little arrow things he's made with the explosive tips on them with the gunpowder and stuff. He sets off the bonfire and yells real loud to get the attention of the predator. I was kind of hoping for in that fight that the whole cat and mouse thing went a little bit longer.
Yeah, to me,
it didn't last very long. Did you get a feel for that yourself when you watched it? Did you want to see more of him not being seen, doing some more damage to him before he finally realizes what's going on because he lost all the mud?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was going to be a little bit longer than it was.
I thought it would have been nice if it had been, but I guess for time constraints and everything, they didn't quite get that far with it. But then they have this nice little fight there, and he tries to hit him with a log or something. And he breaks his arm. He's like, not a good idea.
Yeah.
And so he takes him, he swoops back and he backhands him and sends him flying across the way. And he actually punches it in the mouth a couple of times.
Right.
Takes a few punches back. But
now I do like that at that point that the predator is like, we're not going to use the weapons. It's going to be, you know, you and me, you know, kind of like that typical 80s final showdown that's like hand to hand combat. That's really, you know, have a good old fist fight, which I thought was kind of a cool, you know, little aspect of it.
Yeah. Takes his cannon thing off, tosses his sides, got all the weapons down, takes off his helmet even on top of it. So he's on the protective of the helmet. And of course you're one ugly.
Yeah.
Name that we're not going to mention.
Right.
That whole fight thing right there was, I mean, I guess as believable as it could be, he gets some shots in on him, but I mean, mostly he's getting manhandled by the little alien thing.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't have much of a chance. So he lands in an area where he had the booby traps. He crawls up in there and he's waiting for it and he's yelling at it. Mm-hmm. And it looks up under there at him and he sees he's stopped and he's not trying to go any further. And before he comes in, he stops and it's like he's picked up on the little thing poking down.
The little spike,
But he's looking at the spike. He's, you know, kind of touching a little bit and feeling of it. And Arnold's like, what are you doing? I'm here. Come get me. Come kill me. Come on. Right. So he looks at him. And it's almost like you get to feel him like the predator is almost smiling at him when he looks at him. It's like, nice try.
Right.
Kudos.
Right.
But no. So he's coming around the other way to him. And I don't know if this was done purposely this way or if it's just how it worked out when he come into the area where the entrapment was. But he had the trap coming in of the spikes coming down, right?
Right.
That one got him. I wonder if he had it set up to begin with to catch him with that and if he still made it past it to have the log thing tripped and come down on him at the end. Or did he have it fixed to where maybe he had something on him no matter what side he came in on?
No, I don't think the log was meant to be what killed him. I think that was just like a counterweight for one of the other traps. So I think he kind of lucked up into seeing like he kind of like the way I saw it today, like he kind when he sees him, he realizes, oh, if he's right there under that log, I didn't plan it that way. But if I kick this stick, that's going to release the log and that'll get him. So I don't think he planned it that way at all. I think it just happened to be, you know, a happy coincidence for him.
Yeah. Which in case it works out for him.
The
power of the log falling from that high up, landing on his head without his protective equipment on, was enough to go ahead and take care of the predator at that point. So he sets when he's looking at him and he's like, you know, I forget what the question was at the end of it.
What it the, wasn't Yes. What are you? Basically, what are you is what he asks. And then the Predator asks back the same thing. Like they're looking at each other, like trying to figure out, you know, they're both aliens to each other at this point. So,
yeah. What are you? Or I know it's a little bit more involved than that, but yeah, I get it. Yeah. I remember now.
What the blank are you? Yeah.
The blank are you? And then he tells him, you know, he's sitting, he just starts hitting stuff on his thing. And like he's looking like, what is he doing? You know, and you can't make out what it is until he's recognizing a pattern. And the pattern looks like it's counting down.
Down, right. Yeah.
And now he's laughing. He's got Sonny's laugh going on that he picked up. And so he realizes he has set some kind of destruction thing off or something. He better take off. And good that he did, or else he'd been dead too. But then we finally see the chopper. does show up and pick him up and everything.
And you know that the pilot of the chopper is the guy who played the Predator.
That guy that played the Predator, which would be the, Peter Hall, Kevin Peter Hall.
Kevin Peter Hall. I knew I got two of the three names right.
Kevin Peter Hall.
Yeah.
See if I can find anything other interesting, a tidbit in here before we end the show tonight. So we can find a good one. I'm looking on here and seeing quite a few little tidbits of things on here. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Why he brought in Jesse Ventura. I mean, he interviewed him, and basically, he thought he looked the part. He was big enough. He had a deep voice and was manly. It says Billy first senses a predator after the attack on the guerrilla camp. However, this is not the result of a sixth sense or a heightened state of awareness, which Billy demonstrates in the later segment. Rather, Billy hears the predator mimic his own laugh that he had shared with Hawkins a few seconds before. If you listen closely, you will hear the predator attempt to mimic the laugh somewhat quietly, which unnerves Billy immediately because he would look upward toward the trees. I didn't pick up on that, did you? Now I want to go back and see if I can hear it.
Right.
That is kind of interesting.
You saw that originally the script was just going to be Schwarzenegger against the Predator, like just one-on-one, but Schwarzenegger thought it'd be better to have a team of commandos, so he had the script rewritten to include the team instead of just one-on-one.
I do remember reading about that, yes.
Thought that was cool. He said he wanted to do more of like a Magnificent Seven type of movie. So I think it worked better.
Right. Now they got the actual full names. It says here they were never mentioned in the film, but the full names of the main characters in the original script were Major Alan Dutch Schaefer, Staff Sergeant George Dillon, Sergeant Mac Elliott, Sergeant Blaine Cooper, Sergeant Billy Soule, Corporal Pancho Ramirez, and Corporal Rick Hawkins. So you get all the names of the people there.
Cool.
The original concept from this film originated as a joke. Did you know that?
Oh, yeah.
And someone said the only person Rocky Balboa had yet to fight was E.T., the extraterrestrial. So, of course, with the rivalry we had going on,
yeah,
Schwarzenegger had to take on an alien. All in all, it's one of my favorite movies, I'll say.
Oh, and, for sure,
definitely glad we had a chance to talk about it and everything.
What a great episode with Chris Adams on his podcast, Retro Life for You. So if you enjoyed our discussion about Predator, then you should go check out his other great episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting platform. He's also had some fantastic interviews with 80s and 90s celebrities like Keith Coogan from Adventures in Babysitting, Travis McKenna from Roadhouse, as well as Lance Guest and Catherine Mary Stewart from The Last Starfighter. Please go give those episodes a listen. You won't be disappointed. Well, that's all we've got for this episode. If you love the 80s Flick Flashback podcast, then please leave us a stellar written review and a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to follow or subscribe and tell your 80s Flick loving friends and family all about us. You can also find us on our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Just search 80s Flick Flashback. You can also support the show through buymeacoffee.com for as little as $5 a month. And be sure to visit our online store to order our t-shirts, sweatshirts, and other cool 80s Flick Flashback merchandise. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tim Williams for the 80s Flick Flashback Podcast. Good night, good people.
What's up, dudes? I'm Jerry D of Totally Rad Christmas, the podcast that talks all things Christmas in the 80s. Toys, movies, specials, music, books, fashion, and fads.
If it was gnarly during Christmas in the 80s, he's got it covered. Wait, is there a lot of things to talk about for the 80s and Christmas?
Well, you got the movie giants like Christmas Vacation, Scrooged, and A Christmas Story. There are TV specials like Muppet Family Christmas, Claymation Christmas Celebration, and a Garfield Christmas Special.
Plus classics shown every year.
You also jam out to Last Christmas, Do They Know It's Christmas, and Christmas in Hollis. But most of all, it was a time for the most bodacious, best-selling Christmas toys ever, like He-Man, G.I. Joe, Transformers,
and Cabbage Patch Kids.
Yes, them too. We cover them all, plus much more, including standard segments like Hap Hap Happiest Memory, Gag Me with the Spoon, The Other Half of the Battle,
and Chant with the Littles.
So tune in to Totally Rad Christmas everywhere you get your podcasts. Turn the clock back and dive into those warm and fuzzy memories.
Later, dudes.
Now playing on a cell phone near you. A show for all the manly men out there. Where guys talk about their favorite movies and what they can teach us about being a man. Featuring the coolest guests.
Murder somebody is not like killing an ant.
The most gratifying laughs.
It's Tombstone, what can I say?
And a fresh take on movies like you've never heard before.
This will be the thing that gets written on his proverbial tombstone.
We aren't here to criticize the movies you love, but to praise them for how they apply to our lives as husbands, fathers, and really all men in general. So buckle up your seatbelts, because Manly Movies is here. Subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or your other favorite podcast catcher. And remember, man up.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.